Hey, hi, I'm Ilya Salkind, creator and executive producer of Superman the Movie, and you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hello, comic book connoisseurs. Welcome to Comic Book Central. I'm your host, Joe Stuber, hanging out in the lair and talking about the Man of Steel. That's right, we're continuing our celebration of Superman's 75th anniversary with a look at, in my opinion, the greatest Superman media project of all time and one of the greatest films ever made, the epic that is Superman the Movie. December 10th, 1978, it was 35 years ago this week that Superman the Movie premiered. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm a huge Star Wars fan. In 1977, I was blown away by the George Lucas space opera, but come on, this is my favorite character we're talking about here. And he's up on the big screen? Oh, it was more than I could ever imagine. In fact, I can clearly remember getting ready to head out on a cold winter night in 1978. My mom's friends came over. We were all going to go out to see the movie together. And one of them, I'll never forget this, had a present in hand. It was the two-album John Williams soundtrack. I tell you, it took me no time at all to rip off the plastic wrap, drop the needle on the vinyl, and instantly I was transported somewhere else. I knew that this was going to be a special movie. I still have the album right here next to me. Went to the theater, saw the poster, read the tagline, you know the one, "You'll believe a man can fly." Well, I did. We all did. Young and old, we all believed it. Richard Donner directing, the late, great Christopher Reeve soaring across the screen, and John Williams' triumphant score playing in my head over and over and over on the way home. Unforgettable moment. And to me, no one else has come close to Christopher Reeve as Superman. But in all this, I tell you, one man got the ball rolling almost 40 years ago when he said to his father, "You know, we should make Superman." That man is today's guest, Ilya Salkind. Ilya Salkind was born into a film dynasty. His grandfather, Mikhail, worked in the silent film era and helped introduce the legendary Greta Garbo to the world. Mikhail, along with Ilya's father, Alexander, teamed up on a string of brilliant cinematic releases, including Orson Welles' The Trial. Now, Ilya himself followed along in these giant footsteps and, along with his father, struck box office gold with the international hits The Three Musketeers and the sequel, The Four Musketeers. Both movies were shot simultaneously, a common practice now but almost unheard of back in the day. And the films were directed by Richard Lester, facts which would prove to be quite memorable for cast and crew on the duo's next big smash, the big-budget blockbuster Superman the Movie. Superman the Movie took the world by storm in 1978. It introduced the world to Christopher Reeve and to this day remains the gold standard for comic book films. Well, in 2013, we not only celebrate the 75th anniversary of Superman, but we also celebrate the 35th anniversary of Superman the Movie. Our guest today played a huge part in bringing that masterpiece to the silver screen. He is the executive producer of Superman, Superman 2, Superman 3, Supergirl, and the Superboy TV series. He is Ilya Salkind. Ilya, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me. That's very nice.
That resume, my goodness. It just goes on and on, doesn't it?
Well, it goes on and on because obviously I did, as everybody knows or doesn't know, but I only did the first three Superman, and I'm kind of pretty proud to insist on that because I didn't do Superman 4, I didn't do the Returns, and I did not do the last one, which it was even... In an interview, they picked me up for coming out of a hotel in L.A. and
I saw
the
paparazzi.
Yeah, the paparazzi. It was the fun show.
TMZ.
TMZ, exactly.
They got your 2-minute review of Man of Steel, right?
Yeah, they got it, and I don't know if you saw it, but it was kind of fun because. I didn't want to say much, and I just said, well, you know, so how do you think the movie was? I said, well, you know, it's okay, you know, okay.
It's not mine. It can't be good, right?
Well, I said, it's okay, okay? You know, but with a weak okay, I said, yeah, it's okay. And then there were people there with me, and they said, "Hey, come on, tell the truth, tell what you thought." and I said, it was very Batman-ish for me. But anyway, it went viral. The interview went absolutely viral because, you know, the original Superman producer. Well, you know how they are in the press. They started saying, "Pan the Man of Steel, hates the Man of Steel, doesn't like the Man of Steel," and that's not what I said. I just said it's a little Batman-ish. It's very dark. You know, Superman is hope and joy and. I mean, you know, the way he kills the Zod at the end and all that's not Superman.
Apparently, Ilya Salkin still making headlines just coming out of a restaurant all these years later. Look at the trouble you get yourself into. Just coming out of a building.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Well, it was a nice building. It was the Chateau Marmont, and I had a drink there, and okay.
And now you're giving film reviews. My goodness. Well, you know, you and your team pretty much set the template in place all those years ago, but I'm kind of curious, what was your earliest memory of Superman as a character?
Well, I mean, look, I was a 5-6-year-old, you know, I don't even know if I got that deep in it, you know. But I don't think I was a comic fanatic then, that young. But I read it, and obviously it made an impression, right? It made a pretty strong impression. Wow, you know, this guy is unbelievable, blah blah. And yes, I liked it. Was I a fanatic? I don't think so.
Well, what was it at this point now? You're older. Why Superman? Why was it so important that you thought we should produce Superman?
Well, my dear friend, that is a very good question. I would say that the only kind of rational reason I can see is that my mother, who was a wonderful woman, but she was a little bit... I wouldn't say manic, but a little bit exaggerated. And she said to me when I was 10, 9, you know, that I was supposed to be a prophet, that I was going to be, I even think she said I was going to be Christ, you know, things like that. So, yeah, she was a little exaggerated, okay, to say the least.
No pressure, right?
No pressure at all. And let's be a little bit psychoanalytical here. The mother says you're Messiah, right? hey, Superman is a kind of Christ. Actually, if you saw the film, we had a lot of indications, you know, like Brando is a kind of God, and he says, you know, on Earth they're good people, but they need to be shown the way. I'm sending you there, my son, for that. And if you go on the net and you look at the Superman religion, you're going to have entire sites that talk about, you know, they talk about the similarities of Superman and Christ.
So were you looking for something, a project at the time that had religious or mythical overtones?
I think subconsciously I was, you know, kind of knocked out by that day, you're going to be the Messiah, right? I'd seen the George Reeve, that I'm sure. I'd read some comics. And then one night after Musketeers, we're having dinner at very nice restaurant, actually. I even remember the name was the Café de la Paix, which is, nice, but in a way, this restaurant is historical because that's where, in the dinner, you know, we were very flamboyant after the success of Musketeers. And then we said, okay, what are we going to do? And I said, hey, why don't we try to do Superman? And he said, my dad was European completely. He spoke English well, but with a big accent. And he said, what do you mean, Superman? What is Superman? He didn't know. I said, well, Superman is this guy. You know, he flies. He's got powers. He does good stuff. He's unbelievable. And he says, what are you telling me? And I said, yeah, it's a comic book. And he said, well, and then what? And he flies and he has powers. And I said, yeah. And, you know, he's a great guy. He's like a super Tarzan, you know.
Was your dad sold on the character, or was your dad sold on you pitching the character?
That's a good question. I would say he was very, very, since the hit of The Musketeers and Bluebeard, by the way, which was a hit, and The Light of the Edge of the World, which was a hit, I replaced my granddad as the creative guy, right? And more the producer on, hands-on man. He was the genius finding the money, but I would, you know, obviously spend it and didn't go over budget on the other films. And I'd learned it all from being a runner and, you know, the whole, you know what a runner is? Mm-hmm. It's a guy who goes for coffee and on the set and he does everything.
You worked your way up. Did your father have any qualms about, no, wait a minute, this guy flies? How are we going to pay for this?
No, my father was, I really respect the fact that he had, let's put it elegantly, he had courage. And he said, hey, let me talk to my backers and my people. But I said, of course, we got to do a big movie. And that I said at the beginning, it's got to be big. It's got to be not a George Reeves. It's got to be gigantic. We got to do a real movie. And this I say, and I will say it in front of the Pope. I say it, I did it, I said it, and thank God we ended up doing it. But the fact is, okay, there were some other guys around, and they said, oh, but we'll never make him fly. I said, come on, the technology. Now, don't forget there were no computers then, huh?
All practical effects, yep.
Oh, yeah, all technical.
So when your dad goes and gets this money, what kind of money are we talking about here? What are you thinking this is going to cost?
Well, wait a minute. That's the fun drama story. Okay, point one is we got to get the rights. So the rights belong to NPP, which then was called National Periodical Publications, and belong to Warner's. I say, hey, let's not say we're the Salkinds, let's just say we're Joe Schmidt or Joe DuPont, because if they know we are us, they're going to ask for more money. I was not a bad businessman either. We call and we say, yeah, we're Jean DuPont, and we want the rights. And, in 2 seconds, I don't know how they traced, but they found we were the Salkinds, right? And, we start talking. We say, hey, we want to buy the rights of Superman. Okay, endless deal, 4 or 5 weeks, 6 weeks, guy in New York, me in New York, back and forth. very difficult deal. They wanted every approval under the sun.
You're meeting at this time, too, with Carmine Infantino?
That was after.
Okay.
That was not yet.
They're very protective of their character at this point.
Oh, my God. I mean, we had to choose the actors, make a list. We had to... they had to read the script. They had to approve the script, the costume. I forget it. And it was hell to get that deal done. And I made a list of actors, which they approved. And I think I have it somewhere in my archives, which was hilarious because I put in every famous actor of the day.
Let's run down a few of these. One I think was your suggestion, Bruce Jenner.
Ah, wait a minute. That was a good suggestion, and that was the first guy.
He's not Kardashian moment now. He's actually Olympian.
No. Come on, he just won the decathlon.
For our listeners now, Bruce Jenner looked a little different back in the day.
He looked fantastic. He wasn't Bruce Jenner Kardashian. He was fantastic.
He cut a good figure. He looked the part, right?
Look, he looked the part, and he came to Rome. Now, we jumped a little bit, but he came to Rome, and we tested him. And I'll tell you...
He's in the suit?
He's in the suit.
Okay.
And kind of a makeup shift suit. Wasn't yet perfect.
Yeah.
But frankly, he was great. He was nice. But let's be realistic. Okay, he wasn't an actor, and he looked very, very young.
Yeah.
He looked 22, 23 on screen, and in my head, I saw Superman as a 30-year-old guy.
Right.
Definitely.
Well, that's the character in the script too.
In the script and in the comics.
Yeah.
In the comics, he's 30. So I put the most crazy list. I put Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah, let's run these down. Let me.
Come on, that list was
Muhammad Ali.
Muhammad Ali.
Whose idea was Muhammad Ali?
They accepted him.
Was that your idea?
Yes. I put Muhammad Ali.
I love that.
I put
Pacino,
and they got it. They liked it. They
Clint Eastwood. Did you put down Clint Eastwood?
Clint Eastwood, Steve McQueen, Dustin, Pacino,
Stallone, Neil Diamond,
Neil Diamond. I think Neil Diamond was on the list. Yes. Absolutely. I'm unbelievable. Liz.
And
a lot of guys were not good for the part because Pacino or Dawson, give me a break. You know?
Charles Bronson?
Yes.
Charles Buczynski from my stomping grounds. No, I don't think he would have pulled it off.
Bronson?
And one of the craziest ones I know of, your wife's dentist, Don Voine.
Yeah, that was at the end. That was at the end because, okay.
Some
so
super fillings? What do we got going on? Some super fillings? What's going to happen there?
No, it's so funny because we start with, first of all, the first director was Guy Hamilton.
Right.
Who had done Goldfinger.
Great director.
A good director. And I'd seen Battle of Britain, and he was good. And we got along like a house on fire. We're preparing in Rome with Guy, and we took to write the script. Wait a minute. My first big coup was getting Mario Puzo.
Right. Author who wrote The Godfather.
The moment I got Puzo, you know, everybody started believing that this was not a joke. Because Puzo wrote a great... Two script, by the way, two film part.
How many pages was the Superman script?
Oh boy, the Puzo was about 500 pages. Two films, huh?
Easily.
And, Yeah, easily. I think close to 600 pages. And it was okay. He brought in Zod. He brought a lot of stuff in. But, frankly, it was too slow. It was too long. And, I mean, if we would have made that script, the film would have cost $500 million.
Yeah, you need like a 10-part miniseries or something like that. Did Puzo also suggest keeping the same actor as Jor-El, as Kal-El?
I think you're right. I think Mario came up with that. Mario came up. He said, "Why don't we have Jor-El playing Kal-El?"
Interesting take,
and but. Okay, the script was just too big, too long. And then we had another stroke of luck. We got the guys who wrote Bonnie and Clyde.
David and Leslie Newman.
And Benton. Robert Benton.
Robert Benton, yep. Now, they tweaked Puzo's script, correct?
They worked on Puzo's script, right. Puzo's script. They brought it down, and frankly, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad at all. The only problem was that they put a couple of jokes, which, of course, Donner always brings up, you know, and it's absurd because I knew that those jokes were going to go immediately out. Once
now let's call them what they are. Which is this, the Savala scene?
There were two jokes, man, okay. And they were
ridiculous. Is it
ridiculous.
The Savala scene?
One is the what's his name? Lex Luthor would eat Kleenexes all the time.
Strange.
And Benton and Newman based that. They had an agent called Sam Cohn who used to do that in his office.
He would eat tissues?
He would eat Kleenex, yes, yes, all the time. I mean, he wouldn't eat it. He would just chew it, right? And they put it in for Lex. And the other thing they had...
Telly Savalas.
Oh, yeah, Telly Savalas, okay.
What's the scene? Superman flies down.
Superman flying down, and then Telly is walking, I don't know, with a lollipop or... and I can't remember. Who loves your baby, you know? And Donner brings that every time. He said they wanted to make a comedy. I knew when I read that, I said, okay, that's going.
Was there a scene where Otis would enter Lex Luthor's lair by means of a toilet?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
You did your work. Yes, there was a scene like that.
That one's right out.
that was out fast. I think after I read the first and second draft, I read that. But the other two left stayed in, and I knew very well that I was going to, you know, get rid of them later. But at this point, now of course, the script was damn good. And I tell you that if you look at the last, at the film, in the final film, you have a good 85% of dialogue from Puzo, David and Benton, and Leslie, who then took over, Benton, who started directing, and she took over for him, and she actually wrote a lot of Lois.
Oh, okay. Good stuff.
Yeah, very good stuff. And she wrote a lot of good stuff for Lois.
Now, we mentioned Richard Donner. We want to back up one second because you had Guy Hamilton when you were shooting in Rome.
Yes.
But production moved to England.
Yeah, very good reason.
Little bit of a problem there.
No, a lot of problems, a lot of phony stories. Even Tom Mankiewicz, which I love, the poor guy is gone. But Tom would say they moved to Rome because the lira, I don't know, some stupid. The lira was very high. I don't know what he said. He said some stupid thing.
But there were some tax issues that Guy couldn't
No, wait a minute. The pound was very low.
Okay.
We moved to England because it was so cheap with the pound, and everybody was available.
Okay. So why couldn't Guy go, though?
Because Guy was then in the bracket of the people who would pay, I think it was 99% of their taxes.
Okay.
Unbelievable. Yeah, the Rolling Stones left, the Beatles left, everybody left, and he could only stay in Rome, I don't know, if 6 months, a year, or whatever, but he had to go out of London every weekend.
Right.
To Paris and come back, so it would add up to the right time. And of course, after 3, 4, 5 weeks of that, it was impossible. The guy was exhausted.
Yeah. I mean, you got to have a guy on set direct. I mean, it's a huge movie.
He couldn't do it. I mean, man, and in Italy, by the way, we got totally rammed. We lost more than a mil, I think. Almost $2 million there.
Wow. So financially, unfortunately for Guy, he's out. But thankfully, and fortunately for us, we get Richard Donner.
Fortunately for you. fortunately for me, too. Look, I like Dick. We've made peace many times. But he made a great film, okay?
The two of you made a classic.
Thank you.
A classic.
I thank you because I was very involved. I invented, by the way, the crest, you know, for the Kryptonians.
The symbol, yep.
I invented that. That was my idea. And a lot of stuff. I mean, I was very involved in the film, and Dick
as a good executive producer should be.
Well, you know, executive producer, I took that title because I could take any title. And by the way, you notice I'm the only exec producer.
Yes.
Now, if you look at any film today, or even years ago, you had 3, 4, 5. Exec producers, and you had 1 or 2 or 3 producers. Now, in this case, I thought the exec producer was the best title, and I didn't know enough about here that the guy who picks up the Oscar is the producer.
Correct.
Not the exec producer. So
yes.
I thought the exec producer sounded like the big chief, and I was the first on all the
list. It's the guy that has to do all the work.
Well, you know, now, even some years ago, exec producers were guys who brought ideas, they brought a script, they put money, but they weren't really hands-on. The producer's hands-on, and I didn't know that. So I was hands-on, but there was only one exec producer, and I was basically the big chief, but if I would have been producer, I would have been the big chief.
You and Donner then are at this point casting. Interesting casting note when we're talking about Clark and Lois. Lau Wagner and Linda Carter come in to test for these roles. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Boy, you did your homework, man. Lau Wagner comes in for Soupy.
They're huge on Wonder Woman at this point.
They're huge. Linda Carter comes to see me. I was at the Beverly Hills Hotel pool. She comes. You know, my mouth falls on the floor. She was absolutely gorgeous.
Why didn't she get the role of Lois?
I wasn't really concentrating on Lois, and I was really concentrating on getting the movie going with a Superman. And as the bankers started saying, you need a star, you need a star, you need a star, and I was really not thinking about Lois.
So do you remember your conversation with Linda Carter at all?
I don't exactly remember what I said. I was gaga. No, she was a knockout.
Not that we don't love Margot Kidder, but that would have been a very different movie.
Could have she acted as well as Marvel? I don't know.
The world will never know. The world will never know.
We'll
but
never
you got
know,
you got Brando.
By the way, some crazy agent, which I knew very well because he got me Burton for Bluebeard, and he was the most famous agent in the business then. It was Kurt Franks. Kurt calls me and he says, Ilya, I can get you Brando, I can get you Brando. He had the German accent. I say, come on, Kurt, now you only represent B guys, you represent some directors I actually worked with. And I said, what the hell, you're going to get me Brando? Brando was at the top, huh? After Godfather. And
Godfather, nobody bigger.
He was the god of movies. He was the biggest ever. Okay, so I woke up Alex, and I was in L.A., right? He was in Paris. I woke him up at, 4 in the morning, and I said, I got this Kurt. He says he can get Brando for Jor-El. And Alex, he said, go for it.
Three famous words that changed cinema history.
Thank you very much, but they did. And he says, go for it. And I said, okay. So I called back Kurt. I said, all right, Kurt, you got the $2 million. Then the next morning he calls. He says, look, Brando read the script in the toilet. He wants to do it, but he wants $3.7 million and 11.75% of the gross. So, okay, I call Alex again, and Alex says, do it. No, Alex was, he had it, man. He had the instinct.
Well, thank goodness he did, because...
thank goodness he did, because...
That brought everything together. Everything started falling into place.
Everything, man. You know
Hackman, Donner, everybody.
Everything. The movie wasn't moving. The Warners didn't want the movie. They sold the rights for 20 years, by the way. And that's why, as you notice, it's an Alexander Salkin Presents.
Yep.
It's not Warner Brothers Presents, which is very rare with a studio, right?
Well, and the thing is, too, at this time, you don't have a bajillion superhero movies lighting up the box office. There were none.
Hey, I'm sorry to say this. I invented the comic book movie.
To me, I'm not going to disagree with you. And to me, to this day, it still holds up as number one.
Well, that's very nice of you. But the fact is, before that, there was none. There were TV shows. There were the Batman cartoons, the funny ones. You know, not cartoons.
Some serials,
funny.
Different things. Yeah, but nothing on this level.
But it was not a big movie.
Nope. This was it. This was the big daddy.
This was the daddy of them all. That's no bullshit.
What are your thoughts on working with the late, great Christopher Reeve?
Oh, man. I mean, that's... My thoughts are sad as hell, because that was really a tragedy. The only thing that is extraordinary is that he became, I hate to say it because it sounds like a cliche, but he became the real Superman. He became a real Superman. You know, separate. Superman, a great man. If tomorrow admitting Warners would offer me to do a new Superman, I wouldn't do it. Even for a mint. And you know why? I don't think you can top Chris. He was Superman. He is Superman. He will be Superman.
To this day, when somebody says Superman, or there's a movie or any project, it's always Christopher Reeve is the first thought. Why is that? What did he bring to that role that made him iconic in it?
First of all, he looked unbelievable. He took 30 pounds of muscle. We had met him with Chris, with Donna. We had met him in New York. And he was unbelievable. But we both said, he's a string bean. I never wanted a suit, you know, a big muscle suit. Never. And I said, come on, a guy can build up. And then I went to see Donna again. I said, Dick, we got to test this kid. I mean, we got to test this kid, man. He just was the best in reading. And, you know, he was a complete unknown. He had done, these soap operas. But one thing I'd noticed is he had been on the stage with Katharine Hepburn.
Hey, anybody that can hold their own on stage with Katharine Hepburn.
That's exactly what I thought. And wait a minute, the reading of Superman and Clark, which he did in our suite at the Beverly Hills at the Sherry Nell. And both Dick and I loved it, but we both, and I agree, we both said, he's too thin, man. And then I was watching and was getting closer, and the dates of Brando and Hackman were getting on our back, and, you know, it was terrifying. And I said to Dick, come on, let's test the kid. Let's test him. And I remember that somebody said, hey, okay, let's name 50,000. I said, no. He is Superman. He is the lead of the picture. I want him to get at least 250. And that was a lot of money.
When at what point during the production could you finally breathe easy and go, we got it?
I think the first real flying shot, which is in the fortress, you know, at the end, before he moves to New York, he takes off. And he flies in the fortress, and he does a turn. We all started screaming and shouting. He says, whoa, it works. And that was really the biggest, I guess the biggest moment, because we all, the whole crew said, boy, oh boy, it works.
Well, you know, it's nice to hear that because as a kid seeing it, I mean, I'm, 9, 10 years old when I'm watching this. When I saw that, that was mind-blowing. They did it. They said, you'll believe a man could fly, could. So it's interesting to hear that you guys are in a room watching it saying the exact same thing 35 years ago.
That's when the whole crew, everybody said, wow.
That's great.
We made it.
When you saw it for the film in its entirety, Brando, Smallville, Gene Hackman, everybody, and then it ends with Christopher Reeve flying off as Superman. What did you think at that point? 4 years into this, you know, a four-year chunk of your life is on the screen now.
The first time I saw it with an audience was at the Kennedy Center with Carter for the Special Olympics, and you know, that's a pretty tough audience, right? It's Washington, huh? And they were hot. I felt great. And I remember after that, we all went back. We were staying at the Watergate then, believe it or not. And we were there with Chris, with Johnny Williams, with Margot, Donner. And, boy, oh, boy, we all got drunk. We said, we got it. We got it. This is going to work. Yeah. Now, did we expect it to work the way it worked? I don't know. But, you know, it was 13 weeks number one.
Amazing.
13 weeks. Give me another film that has done that in the last years. 13 weeks. Number one, smashing record after record, and it became number six of all time in America. Number six of all time, number one in Spain, number one in Mexico, number one in Brazil of all time. Huh?
It set the stage, and it certainly set the precedent for comic book movies. It also set the stage for Superman 2. A lot has been made. A lot has been talked about over the years. You could probably Google any story, read any story about it. I'm interested to find out, was Richard Donner offered the opportunity to finish the sequel?
He started saying that my father and I were assholes in Variety. He started saying, it's my way or no way. And then he started saying that my co-producer, Pierre Spangler, who was also my best friend, he is a little less my best friend. So he's alive, but he's okay. But the fact is, he said, I won't work with Spangler.
What was the problem that he had with Spangler?
I don't know. They didn't get along.
Well, come on. You were there. What? I mean, was there...
Well, I don't know. Spangler is more a crunch number. I don't know. They just didn't... At the beginning, they were
Did Donner feel stifled creatively because of Spangler?
I don't know if creatively. I think that he said that Spangler didn't know how to do a budget, and they just didn't click. You know?
Oil and water.
Yeah, and actually, one day Donner almost strangled him. You know, he put him against the wall and he literally lifted him, he's a big guy, Dick.
Well, I think there were some stories with Jack O'Halloran too that came out.
Yeah.
It's not like it was the calmest set.
Jack O'Halloran came into Spangler's office and said, "I don't get my check," you know, and of course Spangler got blue because O'Halloran was really 6'9" or 6'7". I don't know.
You got to pay non. I mean, the guy's huge.
He's huge. He's a big guy, and you know, of course, Spangler got nervous, and because the checks were just taking time to clear from Russia, from Switzerland.
Kryptonian villains don't understand that. They don't understand. Kryptonian villains don't understand economics of the Earth.
No, they don't. Look, I made peace with Jack at a party when Superman Returns opened, actually. We met.
That's great.
And, we made peace.
So you're saying that Donner was offered the opportunity
Donner
to finish
was
the...
Donner was offered to finish. I had a vague worry that he would go up to $500 million, because that's what I didn't finish telling you. Is the first time we did the deal with DC, who became DC. The film was going to cost $15 million, the two films. And truthfully, the two films, meaning one film and one, I would say 60%, 65% shot by Donner, ended up costing $120 million. And my father was absolute genius and found the money. And there was a great guy at Warner's who died, Frank Wells, who actually Warner's shoved in $40 million in there. I think if the film would have flopped, Warner's might have flopped. They were not as big as then as now, and there was all the the whole Warner setup now. There was just Warner Films and. They had merchandising and about that, and cost $120 million. So I said, and Donner and I got, and even Spangler and Donner, we all, you know, rejoiced at the opening. Okay, everybody was embracing, and okay, but then he started insulting us in the press. Really insulting. And when he said, you know, no Spangler, my way or no way, I think he actually said Alex and Ilya assholes. I said to Alex, I said, hey, we can't work with this guy. He's going to go over $400 million now because Warner's going to be kissing his ass. Everybody's going to be kissing his because it's such a hit. And we can't do that. I said, look, I had done something very sharp, I must say. And I'd taken Richard Lester as an uncredited producer on Superman 1, you know, towards the last 3-4 months of shooting. Because the film lasted almost 2 years, by the way, to shoot, huh? Supposed to be 9 months and forget it. unbelievable problems and special effects, and there were no computers.
So Lester's in basically as a go-between between you and Donner.
Yeah, he was an actual go-between, but he was also a damn good director. I mean, he did the Beatle movies, he did Petulia, he did, of course, Musketeers.
Yeah, different sensibility, a little more comedic.
Yeah, more comedic, but I knew he could take over. Especially that he was there every day. He could have taken over the next day.
Lester ultimately brought in to direct Superman 2. Interestingly enough, though, Donner did get to go back and put his vision out there. Did you ever get to see the Donner cut of Superman
2? Of course I did, and I will absolutely say what I think. He made two gigantic mistakes, which I cannot understand him and Tom being involved. I wasn't involved at all, although I exec produced it, right, from the credits.
Right, yes.
Well, yeah, it's my footage. But
that's your life up there.
Exactly. But he made two mistakes, which there are three things that are unbelievable. That in his cut, he makes love with her with his superpowers. Now, that's a no in comic book lore. You never have a superhero make love with a mortal.
I'll ask why.
Why? Because, can we be a little vulgar? No.
Clean it up for the family audience, but I'm sure you can use a euphemism.
Well, he makes love with her, and what if... when he has his pleasure, he shoots her off in the sky. Come on. I mean, he's Superman, right?
You know, I'll be honest, that never occurred to me.
Well, my dear friend.
That's why you're the executive producer, right?
Thank you very much. But that's why I also studied comics like a maniac. And there's never a comic book character, super, that does it with a human.
Okay, moving on. What's the second mistake?
But, wait a minute, I want to finish that. But, people will say, wait a minute, in Superman 3, he makes love with Lorelei on the Statue of Liberty.
Correct, right? The evil Superman, yep.
Yeah, but wait a minute.
Well, he goes back to her place, yeah.
No, whatever they do it, right?
Correct.
Okay, I have a reason. The kryptonite that the Pryor did is weird, right?
It's a little, yeah, it's got tobacco in it.
Whatever it's got, man, he becomes mean, right? So perhaps that made him also mortal to make love. I mean, it's a way out.
If the executive,
but it is possible.
If the executive producer of Superman is telling me that, I'll believe it.
Hey, look, he is affected by that kryptonite. He becomes mean. He has powers, but perhaps he can make love.
I will take your word for it.
Well, it's not a word. It's just a stupid guess because. because the stupid Gorman prior put something weird in there, and hey, he drinks vodka, he drinks whiskey. Have you ever seen Superman drink whiskey?
Only in three.
Exactly. So if he drinks whiskey, perhaps he can make love normally.
Hey, what's the second mistake you thought in the Donner cut?
The second mistake is obvious, is the story with Brando, which we didn't take into for two reasons. One, he was going to get another $18 million, right? And two, I said, it was my idea, I said, wait a minute, who talks more about love to a son than a mother? And I think a kid who's 15, 18 is going to go to his mom and say, hey, you know, this girl, I don't know. Perhaps I created that idea, but I think it kind of works. So he talks with Susanna York because the whole story between Superman and Jor-El, Brando, is finished in the first film. Because when he turns the world around, he's saying to his father, hey, man, I'm my own guy. Remember?
Correct.
Brando's voices say, you cannot affect humanity. And he says, wait a minute. I do what I want, man. I'm going to save this woman.
He was a rebellious kid.
That's the end. He's a man. He became his own man.
Speaking as a fan, I have to say I'm glad we did get to ultimately see the an official version of the Donner Cut. So, and because you were behind it, we appreciate that. Hey, you brought up Superman 3. In the time we have left, I just want to mention a couple of things I had heard about on the original concept. Had you thought in Superman 3, we obviously know where it went, a little bit different than what was intended. Had you originally thought to make Brainiac the villain?
Yes, yes, I had. I actually, it's on the net. I wrote it. It was very, very, very easy writing. I didn't, you know, I just wrote kind of a thing. I put Supergirl in there, but she wasn't related to Superman. It was another dimension. I put Mixlipidlick, you know, the little funny guy. And I put Brainiac.
What happened to that version? Why didn't we get to see
that version? Terry Semel, who was then the chairman of Warner's, didn't like sci-fi. And it was way too much sci-fi. And the only thing they kept, I didn't get a credit, I didn't even fight for it. The only thing they kept is that in my storyline, Brainiac makes Superman mean and good. But it's Brainiac who does it. You know, he pushes a button, he becomes mean, he pushes a button, or he does a telepathic thing, you know, whatever. And in the film, that is one of the mistakes. Hey, the film did $100 million, got the best reviews, okay? But the mistake there is for the kids, they couldn't get that, you know, transformation of the good and the bad. They couldn't get it. It was too intellectual, if you want. And we lost kids there. And then it was the third film. I was getting a little bit, I was getting a little supered off, and I gave in and two or three things that I shouldn't have given in, but I did. Like the beginning, I hated what Lester did, you know, with the Ruth Goldberg stuff.
The slapstick, the all-out slapstick.
Yeah, I hated that, but I didn't fight enough, or I lost the fight. I can't remember. The other mistake I made there was I wanted a different actor to play Ross Webster. I wanted Frank Langella. he would have been a Webster like Webster should have been. He would have been a bigger-than-life villain. He was gorgeous. He was impressive. He was a wonderful actor. And I had a fight with Richard Lester where he said, it's very funny because Lester is not English at all. He's from Philadelphia. But everybody thinks he's English because he adopted an English accent, actually. No, he really does. He does speak like that. And he said, no, I can't work with Langella. It's impossible. And, okay, I ended up taking Rob Vaughn, who was okay, but he wasn't bigger than life. And, wait a minute, you had a little guy called Richard Pryor, who was damn good.
Was it your input to bring Richard in?
No, it was some schmuck from Warner's who saw him. I don't think I saw him. I saw it after. I think they taped it. Saw him on the Johnny Carson.
Yeah, he was Richard talking about how much he enjoyed Superman.
Yes, and he was imitating him and all that. And then somebody from Warner's called and said, "Whoa, Pryor wants to do Superman." And okay,
could you have vetoed that?
I could have, but I liked Pryor. I loved him, and he was the biggest star in the world. He was the biggest then.
Looking back, if I gave you a mulligan on that, would you change that up?
No, I would have changed Langella.
Okay.
With Langella, the equilibrium of the film would have worked because you had a bigger than life villain. You had a bigger than life schmuck, Pryor, right? A funny guy, but he's a genius. And you had Superman. And the other thing where I was weak is I left some of those little jokes, like the lights and stuff. They weren't needed. And the beginning was terrifyingly bad. It was not the movie. They were mistakes. I mean, and I let them go. Now, the fight between the two guys is considered possibly one of the best sequences in the whole series.
Absolutely. Yeah, that scene, and especially when he's ultimately victorious and you've got the shirt reveal.
Oh, man, come on. That's a scene.
Yep. That's money right there.
That and look, they all said the guys who don't like Soupy 3 say that scene is one of the best of the series.
That's a good
of my
one.
Film of my three films.
I personally would have liked to have seen Brainiac though. I wish your original vision would have come to.
Man, it was fantastic. I mean, there were mistakes, but I hadn't run it through DC yet, and there were things to change. I think I would have not had an affair with Superman and Supergirl. I would have changed some stuff, but it was mind-boggling, huge movie with Nixon Piddleick, who had unbelievable amounts of powers.
Release it as a book, and maybe we'll get the Lost Superman 3 adventure.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
Hey, real quick, I want to wrap up a little bit here with Supergirl. Just get your thoughts on Supergirl, the film as a whole, and Helen Slater, who really is amazing looking in that film.
Well, she was fantastic. She was perfect, I would say. And I would say the mistake in that film was that TriStar, because Warner's didn't want it, TriStar took it over, and they launched it as, the producer of Superman bringing a Supergirl. So everybody went to see it expecting Superman. I'm sorry, it's a fairy tale. Totally different tone. And if it would have been launched as a fairy tale, the adventure of Supergirl, the cousin of Superman. I don't know, something like that. Or is a fairy tale.
What was Helen Slater like to work with?
Oh, she was great. She was cool. She was terrific. She was right on the dot. She muscled up. She was great. The film was a dream. The only problem I had, and this is kind of fun, is that the director, I did two films with him. I did Santa Claus the movie also. Is General Schwark, who became a very big television guy now. And he had one problem. He was too soft. So everything I said, he'd say, oh, yes, Ilya, this is great, because he's French. He says, oh yes, this is fantastic. Hey, I make mistakes, and I need a lesser Donner who say, wait a minute. I don't think that's good.
And then we see what happens when you wish for it.
Well, I don't wish for it. You know what I did too? Then you were looking
for another Donner again.
I was looking for even a Lester. Lester knew how to hold his ground. Believe you me.
Well, we certainly have an interesting film that we got with Supergirl. And, again, it's kind of one of those neat little curiosities. I like going back and looking at it, and I think Helen Slater makes for a great mate of mine.
Supergirl, if you take it as a fairy tale, is pretty good.
Well, for our listeners who haven't seen it, do yourself a favor. Go grab the DVD and check it out. It's a pretty cool watch. Hey, you also put together Superboy, four seasons of Superboy, which became The Adventures of Superboy. Thoughts on the TV show? What was your experience like bringing the Boy of Steel to television?
Well, that was great because I'd never done TV and never. Boy, the first episode did a 5.9 in syndication, which was almost 6,700,000 people watching. So,
well, there's a lot of TV shows today that would love to have those numbers.
You just said it. You know, today if you make a 2 or 3 in network.
Yep.
You're a hit, man.
Yep.
So we had a 5.9, so it started like a hit. And I did a good cast. The cast was great. And I took directors. Each episode had a different director. So it's crazy work because you prepare one, shoot one, and finish the other one at the same time. And then the second season, I changed everything. I changed, out of four actors, I changed three, which I don't think has ever been done for a successful show.
Now, big cast change. Went from John Hames Newton to Gerard Christopher as the Boy of Steel.
Yeah, and the villain, especially the villain, which I had the terrible Lex Luthor, was a very bad actor, very good looking, but very bad actor. And I had him take some classes. He was a little better. If you see the series on the last one, he was better, way better. But still, and I changed completely, and I invented the idea that Lex Luthor had aged himself, had grown 6 inches, the whole thing. And I put this fantastic actor, Sherman Howard, which between us and the 100 people who are listening, or I hope more than 100, the billion people who are listening.
There you go.
The billion people who are listening, I'm sure agree. I put this Sherman Howard, who I think, frankly, is the best Luthor to date. I think he's better than Hackman.
Wow. High praise.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's unbelievable.
Well, it's another super project from the mind of Ilya Salkin. How can people get in touch with you, your fans? You're out on Facebook, and it's the real you.
It's the real me. I know that.
we did that one time. You posted, yeah, this is the real me.
Yeah, yeah, and in four languages, I
yes,
said. I said, I am the real me.
It's him. He's out there. He answers his messages on Facebook. So if you got some Superman questions.
I started answering lately a little more. I wasn't doing it so much, but it was me. And now I started answering, and you know, when I have time, because I'm working on three films now. One is a semi, I wouldn't say intellectual, but semi serious small film, and then I'm working on two gigantic ones.
Can you tell us what they are?
I'm going to announce it on the site, so I can tell you. One is The Abominable Snowman.
Okay.
And it's absolutely fabulous because I had the guy, Crash McCreary, who is the new genius of design. He's like the new Stan Winston. And he designed the snowman, who is absolutely beautifully gorgeous.
And what's the other large project you got going on?
The other one is one, believe it or not, that I've written, I don't know how many years ago, and that's going to be called Begum, The Legacy of War.
And we can monitor your Facebook page for updates on these projects?
Yeah, I'm going to announce them on my site first.
What's your website?
It's the Ilya Salkin Company.
Check out the website. He's on Facebook. It's really him. He'll talk to you about it. And I tell you what, Mr. Salkind, thank you so much all these years later, because certainly one of the most legendary films ever to hit the screen. It's changed the face of movies. It's changed the face of comic book movies. I still think it's the granddaddy of them all. And without you and your father footing the bill, coming up with the ideas, and getting it out there, we never would have had it.
Well, thanks. I mean, definitely it has created the comic book movie. There's no question.
And it was your dad that came up with the money to put it all up.
Without my dad, there would have been no film, my friend.
That's right. Every dollar's up on the screen, and we have him to thank for it. And we have you to thank for being on the show today.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, my thanks to Ilya Salkin for taking some time to join me on Comic Book Central today. Make sure you check out the website, IlyaSalkinCompany.net. You can also catch up with Ilya on Facebook. And be sure to catch me and my buddy Keith Voss in our segment on Indiana Jones comics over at the IndieCast. Tell them about it, Ed Dollista.
In each fortnight to the IndieCast, the world's number one Indiana Jones fan podcast.
Trust me.
Featuring the latest news, reviews, and interviews with on-screen and behind-the-scenes talent who help bring to life the greatest adventure movie series ever made. Each episode has the latest from the world of Indiana Jones, as well as interactive segments, trivia, contests, and specials, including radio dramas and music retrospectives. The IndieCast.
It's a transmitter. It's a radio for speaking to God.
Available in iTunes or listen directly at theindiecast.com.
If adventure has a name, it must be the IndieCast.
We're having some fun over there at the IndieCast, and they're also having some fun with Derek Cook over at monsterkidradio.net. Super scary, super cool podcast. Check it out. And keep checking in here at Comic Book Central. The website, comicbookcentral.net. Give it a like on Facebook at facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. Tweet and retweet me over at the Twitter at comicbookctrl. Download the show on iTunes. Hey, do you like what you're hearing? Post a kind review, please. And be sure to drop me a line and tell me what's on your mind. joe@comicbookcentral.net. Well, we're out of time, but don't despair. Just as Lex Luthor is sure to return in the next Superman flick, Comic Book Central will return. And if you've been following the show on Facebook and Twitter, you know I've mentioned a big announcement this week for the show. Well, for my first few episodes, I've been premiering them every 2 weeks,
Starting next week, Comic Book Central goes weekly. That's right. Just like comics hit the stands once a week, Comic Book Central hits the interwebby once a week. So many good interviews I got to get to. I want you all to hear them as soon as possible. So we're going weekly starting next week. Superman the Movie 35th Anniversary Celebration continues December 13th with the baddest of the bad, the Kryptonian villain himself, Non. That's right, Jack O'Halloran pays a visit, and I hope I don't say anything to make him angry. Until then, kids, keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the Lair, Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 Unported License.
This is fantastic.